B-Pod Studios.
Now, the show you'll be talking about.
That was not me hemming and hawing.
In therapy.
Socks, stupid socks.
Felker and Mass. Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I don't know. I haven't made my decision yet. They might end this tomorrow night.
Oh, come on.
They might end this tomorrow night. And let me tell you why. I think they smell blood. I think that Steph Curry, I have a very hard time imagining he's going to even come close to duplicating his performance from game five. I think he's going to come there in Boston and play lights out for the second game in a row. Okay? And I don't expect Klay Thompson to disappear. The Boston Celtics in clutch situations, you've lamented that all season long. We know there ain't going to be I don't think there's going to be a blowout. I'm almost willing to tell you it has to be a blowout for Boston in order to win this game. If it's close, they're going to lose because I think they're going to be tight as hell. If it gets tight, if it's tight in the fourth quarter, I think Golden State might finish them out. I'm not okay. There yet.
Okay, Stephen A.
Obviously.
We'll talk to Stephen A tomorrow. Stephen A will join us on set. We're back at the Harp again tomorrow,
yes? Yep, that's correct.
Okay, and Stephen A is going to come across the street and give us some time. So
I'll actually be in person this time.
And Maz will be here to face down Stephen A face to face. But that'll be tomorrow, probably in the 4 o'clock hour. Those are his thoughts. Curry's sniffing blood, and it could very easily end the thing tomorrow night. Yep, absolutely. I see you winning too. Like the honest answer is I don't know what's going to happen.
The Curry thing I'm a little concerned about because I mean he goes 0-3, you know, 0-3 pointers in this last game. Like he's got to be one to show out tomorrow night, and he did in the Friday night game there. So I don't know. I could see that kind of performance again where he goes for like 40 plus.
You're just going to need something close from one of your guys if
right.
You want to win. And somewhere along the line, again, look, Mike, I'll tell you what, for all the analysis we've done, honestly, most of the time it comes down to your best player versus their best player. It's been a landslide for Golden State so far. In fact, you could argue, really, that were it not for game one, this thing would be over. The Celtics needed a historic fourth quarter for crying out loud to win that game. And I'm not telling you should ignore that. I'm just saying that it was an avalanche. Curry has been so far the superior player over Jason Tatum that I think it's been that kind of edge in this series.
Stephen A. mentioned Klay Thompson. I'm not sleeping on that. In his last three games, he's averaging over 20 points a game, shooting 40% from beyond the line. So he's
awakened.
Yeah, it hasn't been like a big pop, but sort of steadily he's becoming a factor in the series. And if that's a launching pad for a real big night, then, you could be in real trouble. I don't discount that. I also don't discount the fact that the Warriors continue to miss a crap ton of open shots, a crap ton. What are they shooting from behind the line this series, Maz? Do you have it?
Yep, 35.6%.
It's low for them.
It is. Yep, it is. I mean, typically, I think during the regular season, they were up close to 38. Okay, 37, 38. And the Celtics, oddly enough, from three-point in this series, 41%.
Wow, they're making their threes.
So again, it's the shots inside the line that are killing them. And the turnovers. And those two things go hand in hand. So, I don't know what the answer is there, but they've done... Look, this brings us back to the original thing, Mike. Defensively, they've done fine.
Yeah.
They're keeping Golden State around 105, give or take. That's a win. They're a 115-point team during the regular season. That's a win. But if you can't get to 106, no good. It's not good enough.
Okay, phones, as promised. Sean in Mansfield. Hi, Sean.
Hey, I wanted to piggyback off that interview that you guys just played with Jason Tatum, talking about everybody's dealing with injuries. Do you guys think that maybe his shoulder is not right when he got that stinger? I think it was last series. And if you notice, when he shoots his free throws and his three-pointers, he's not chucking that shoulder in right away.
So I don't notice that. I notice him,
Well, he likes showing that he's feeling something. But then that last time he really showed it off, maybe this was game three or game four. There's been so many at this point. It's all, my head's spinning. But in that same game, after he's like, let me work this out. There was a cross-body, cross-court pass to Peyton Pritchard, who was wide open to hit a three. That was like 100 miles an hour with that arm and shoulder. So I don't want to hear about the shoulder at this point or COVID, long COVID or anything like that. I don't want to hear about it. Not at this point.
He's probably got something in his shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, here's the other thing. If they told us after the series that he separated his shoulder, or dislocated his shoulder, I don't think it changes anything.
No.
Because 5 years from now, you know what? We're going to look at it and say they lost the series, and oh, yeah, Tatum hurt his shoulder in that series, but they weren't going to win it anyway. Or it'll be something like that. So it becomes a footnote. I'm not telling you it's a zero, but I don't think it's going to, you know.
How are Steph Curry's ankles right now?
It's not going to change the narrative, is all I'm saying.
Nor should it. Paxton in Salem. Go ahead, Paxton.
Yes. So first off, I want to say I love Tatum. But all this talk about he may be too young and already giving him excuses is absolutely ridiculous. He's the one who set these expectations. He demanded respect, was all butthurt about not being all NBA or in the top 10 of the league with all the other superstars. He has the experience. He has playoff experience. And I already gave him those excuses of being too young in years prior. Now you've made the All-NBA. You've made it past the conference finals. Now I'm holding him accountable for the expectations he set for all of us.
Okay, I'm with you. Can't have it both ways. You want to be the guy, then you got to be held accountable in the short term. A couple of quick follow-up thoughts on the Bruce Cassidy conversation. Chris in the car, go ahead, please.
Yeah, just a couple things. So Tampa's plus 150, right, for the series, so like you guys said.
I love them there. I love that.
Me too. I do. I like those odds too.
Go ahead.
Yep. And then the thing on Cale Makar, and I know, you know, he plays out west and everything. That kid is the real deal. If I'm picking first, it's not McDavid. It's not a McKinnon. It's him. But on the Cassidy stuff, and you guys stole my thunder a little bit, but I think Maz mentioned, you know, hey, great job, great. Those guys fire coaches like it's nothing. The Boer, good coach, gone 2 years, whatever it was, and the guy in New York.
Yeah, Gallant. So they do rifle through coaches. That's, you know, they might, Bruce might get him back into the playoffs and get fired because the owner out there is trigger happy. Big expectations. They spent a crap ton of money. They're constantly right up against the cap out there. And I guess he could go to effing Ottawa and have a nice long run and just be mediocre and have job security, but then he'd have to live in Ottawa. I know he's from there, but then you'd have to live in Ottawa.
I'd go this route.
And suck. Why not, if you're going to be a Bear, be a Grizzly. Go take it on in Vegas.
Okay, so again, we look at it as, well, if he doesn't win, he'll get fired. What if he does win?
That would be hysterical.
What if he leaves Boston and wins a cup?
Oh, that'd be great.
Maybe he gets an extension in Vegas.
Ryan and Billerica, hi.
What's up, boys? Listen, the Bruins look like jackasses for firing him right now. I mean, just ask yourself, really, is Trent Frederick going to stop acting like a jackass because Bruce Cassidy's gone? No, he's not. Is Studnicka going to become the second-line center you need him to be because Bruce Cassidy's gone? No, he's not. And you want to know why, Michael? Because Jack Studnicka sucks. Thank you.
No, well said. Couldn't have put that any better myself.
Thank you.
Somehow a more nurturing, positive-minded coach, younger, more positive-minded coach, is going to turn Jack Studnicka into a player. I'd like to see this.
Yeah, me too. What's he going to do, sprinkle him with magic dust?
I don't see it. Mark and Easton. Go ahead, Mark, on the Celts.
Hey, how you guys doing? Great show, as always. So I got two main points on the offense going stagnant, especially down the stretch. So I go back to game four. The last 3 minutes when it's a three-point game, I'll give you one on. Smart takes a three, misses it. Brown gets the offensive rebound. Right back to three. He immediately hucks it up again. Miss. Al Horford comes down, misses a three. Next possession, makes a three. And then Derek White gets the last shot. So that's the last five possessions in that game, and neither Tatum or Brown take a shot. I get it, the double cover, and they're trying to get the teammates involved. But get the teammates involved early in the game, and when it gets down the stretch, you have them two take the shots. And then Maz, 2 segments ago, picked on the drive and kick offense, and he didn't like it. I like it when it's effective, because when it's effective when you drive and the main goal is to take the layup and not kick. These past two games, they've been driving and jumping. When they get to the basket, they just jump up and look around aimlessly and then just dish it out, and it's usually an errant pass.
That is true. I'm just going to stop you there. Just stop and elevate. Why are you laughing, Naz?
Because I like it when it's effective. Well, so do I. It's the ineffective part I worry about.
Maz has some thoughts on this Celtics offense. Tim Welch had some good thoughts on this Celtics offense last night on TV. We'll relive some of that and get into that topic right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think because they stand around too much, and then they're trying to make too many one-on-one plays, and that creates traffic. That creates dribbling into trouble. That creates end-of-shot clock situations where you have to make a play yourself, and then the Warriors know that, and they're attacking the basketball. I don't think they're getting good player movement either. They stand around on the perimeter. There's five out, and one guy tries to make a play. Instead of just moving the ball by the pass, they're trying to move it off the dribble too much. And when they're at their best is when the ball moves from side to side, and there's also player movement on the weak side to occupy the defense. We kind of all laughed at Draymond Green when he said Derek White, Al, and he read the stats of how many threes they made in game one, but they made the adjustments. We're not letting those guys open. We're going to make somebody else beat us, and if Tatum and Brown try to dribble drive into traffic, we're going to attack them too with the double team and then force the turnover. They're very readable right now with their offense. I think they've got to come up with just a little bit more exact movement, some more sets. They kind of play on reads and reacts instead of, you know, exact stuff. And I liked earlier in the playoffs when they went two-man game with Brown and Tatum on one side of the ball, kind of isolated. Then you have to make a decision. Are you going to double the ball? Are you going to switch and give them some space on one side of the floor? They've kind of gotten away from that in this series.
Tim Walsh last night on Boston Sports Tonight with some offensive thoughts. It's that side of the floor, Maz.
Yes, no question.
Playing good defense. They're holding the Warriors 104-107. That's good production against a team like Golden State. It's their offense. And everything else has been fine. The rebounding, fine. Turnovers are a problem. But that, again, that talks speaks to their offensive issues. It's their offensive problems. So what are your thoughts on that?
So I think they've just become too stagnant on that side of the floor. And in watching the, you know, again, I had to watch game four after the fact. So I watched it on the flight back to Boston over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And then I watched game five the next night. So the fourth quarter of game four into game five to me felt like the same thing. They just stood on the perimeter. Someone would try to dribble into the paint. Then they'd kick. And half the time the ball was getting picked off or the guy was getting stripped to it in there. There was no movement to me. There was nobody running along the baseline, nobody cutting to the basket. And look, in the studio here today, we have, Mike, that's what, NBA TV over there on the right?
That's correct.
Okay, so we have NBA TV on. They're showing highlights back of game three, and there was a highlight of Smart. They're moving the ball, you know, laterally on the perimeter. Horford cuts to the hoop. Smart finds him, dunk. Are guys cutting to the basket anymore? I never see that. Game three is the last time I saw it, now that I think of it, which is why they got all those points in the paint. They were able to get the ball in there in isolation and pound the crap out of Golden State inside because Golden State was defending the perimeter and someone cut to the basket, and I don't see any of that now. Now I see a very predictable offense. And I'm not telling you that this is what the coaches want. I'm just telling you they lapse into it. It becomes just them dribbling on the perimeter. Nobody sets a pick for someone off the ball. All you get oftentimes is someone on the ball. Then the defense switches. The guy drives. The defense collapses. Turnover, a bad shot. Happens every time, it feels like. They got to get people moving again. They've got to set screens off the ball. They got to cut to the basket. You know, it can't be just the predictable guys on the outside switching off.
Go ahead. They have a size advantage, too, unless Looney's in there. But still, like, I don't know, try to get it down low to Williams or Al Horford, too. You know, they're 2-3 happy these last couple of games.
And there's no movement.
Right.
It's stagnant.
And well said, they're too often read-react, you know, drive, kick, try and find that isolated matchup as opposed to running a set. You know, Udoka can make sure guys are in motion by running something.
Yes.
You know, just simply that. Welch, as a coach, looks at that and says they're not running anything. And so that's something, that, you know, to see. Let's see. They have not done a great job adjusting in this series.
No, they have not. And again, I thought they did from game two to game three. Game three was excellent. I mean, they played a good game three. Okay, since that time, I don't, you know, we saw, I would say they played pretty well for the first half, three quarters of game four, but then the collapse at the end of it ruined the whole thing, and game five was a no-show.
Here's another thing to consider, though. Are the Warriors just better defensively than it looked at earlier parts in that series?
Yes.
And that was my big thing coming out of game three. The Warriors ranked as an excellent defensive team in the regular season. They were second only to you. And that I know that number went down a little bit in the second half of the year, but be that as it may, whether they were second or seventh or whatever, the Warriors have rated as a good defensive team all year long. And you were just crushing them. And I walked into game four and I said, if the Warriors aren't as good as they rate defensively, then this thing's over. And then they turned it around. You know, you said the crowding thing, Maz, and the playing rough. The Warriors have dedicated themselves to playing rough, and not just because Green did some minor pushing during dead balls in the first few games. Maybe this is Windhorst who wrote this. They're refusing to give Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, the Celtics' primary ball handlers, much space. The crowding is frustrating Boston.
They've gotten right up on them. So now they just can't get room to move. And then these guys are not great ball handlers. You know, Tatum's better than he's shown. Brown is a freaking train wreck.
Yeah.
Okay, but Tatum is better than he's shown. But because they're in their shorts, now they can't move. Now they're getting hacked at. The ball's coming out. And what I do worry about is that frustration factor. Now they're getting frustrated. They get on the floor and they make it worse. They spin their wheels and dig themselves deeper. Golden State's definitely played better defense. 100%, Mike, to get back to your original question. But in the same breath, let me ask you, where is their best defense? And I would say it's on the perimeter.
Oh, but not even clear. They don't have a rim protector.
Okay, so you got to find a way to get in there. And again, I'm not an astute enough basketball strategist to tell you how. But I do know that picks off the ball, cutters, screens off the ball, all that will help you get guys. It will help you get the ball to space.
Either way, more on the Golden State defense. Welsh said they made a pretty good adjustment early on in this series that has given you trouble. Give me that one, Kevin, please.
Golden State's made major adjustments with their defense since
what,
game
exactly?
one. Well, first of all, game one, they overhelped. They overhelped on drives. Celtics spread you out. They drive into the gap. They're helping on drivers, kicking out to open shooters. Now they're not helping. They're staying home on the shooters out on the perimeter. Grant Williams is zero. Pritchard is zero. They're not laying off those guys at all. And also, they're playing Tatum tough. They're playing Brown tough. All of his threes have been under duress, and Golden State is not helping into the paint. They're staying home on the three-point shooters. So you're waiting for the Celtics to burst out one of those games like they did game seven against Milwaukee or game one against Golden State. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't think Golden State's going to allow it.
It's interesting adjustment.
Yeah, they don't cheat as much, right? They were cheating more early, which again brings me to that. How are the Celtics losing the ball so much in the paint? Like what is happening?
With just the one-on-ball defender is often enough.
So, and if that's the case, then Tatum's got to beat Andrew Wiggins and Jaylen Brown's got to beat his guy and they're going to have to find ways to score. If Jason Tatum can't beat Wiggins one-on-one, then either he's not as good as we think he is or Wiggins is some type of superstar, and I would think it's the first thing more than the second. There's no way I would trade Jason Tatum for Andrew Wiggins.
No way, but Wiggins has outplayed him.
Yes. Yep, and that has to change.
Big issue so far. All right, so those are some coaching adjustments there. Back to your calls on the nature of this series. Ron in Worcester. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, hey, Felger and Mass, good show. I believe that the Celtics will definitely win game six, and I have a good feeling that they will win game seven, and I just wanted to tell Maz that when he does the Red Sox games, he does a really good job, and they got to do about something about Kevin Millar. He should be at the Comedy Channel, not doing the Red Sox games. I can't stand listening to him. I'll have to listen to the radio, not him.
Okay, well, don't do that. I did catch maybe 30 seconds of it last night where Millar's chiming in from his couch. I don't know if that works.
Yeah, I don't like doing remote broadcasts myself. I'm only going to speak for that. I don't like doing it myself. I like being there.
Brendan in Weymouth. Go ahead, Brendan. You're up next with Felger and Maz. Hi.
I just think the biggest problem with the Celtics right now is that the players are just happy to be there. I mean, you saw it after they beat the Heat. They were celebrating as if they had just won the finals. And, I mean, Tatum is a guy that likes to compare himself to Kobe all the time. But last time I checked, Kobe never crossed his pants as much as Tatum has crossed his pants in the playoffs. So
okay, Deuce Tatum, back to that. Pants crapping. You do have to worry. If there was a little bit of just happy to be there, and I think even that's overstating it. But however, they knocked at the door of the finals coming out of the East so often that it did feel like when they got through that barrier, I mean, maybe just human nature says, oh, we're finally here. This is what we were trying to get to all this time. As opposed to the Warriors, it made no difference to them whether they lost in the conference finals or the finals or the second round. For them, it's a championship or bust, and that's all that matters for them. For you, it was a little different. To finally make the finals was something. And has that worked against you a little bit? It might.
I would say probably. Because, again, Golden State, it's a good way to put it. If they lost in the second round of the finals, they're equally as pissed.
Same difference.
It's one mission for them and one mission only, championships.
You still look at them and you say, what the hell? You won two with Durant, one without him, and that's all you are.
And these guys are still in the growing process where they think, okay, we went another step.
Another step. We've done it.
Next year, we'll take the next one.
Yeah. I definitely think somewhere in the recesses of your mind, that might be at play. So Kevin Paul DuPont wrote in the Globe today that Cale Makar, the young defenseman there, UMass product in Colorado, who's filthy good, is the closest thing the sport of hockey has had since Bobby Orr. I think he was serious. Nick in Westport, your thoughts on that analysis?
It's exactly what I wanted to talk about, because you're so right that the gap in talent between guys like Makar and what we have in the Bruins and what we think and want McAvoy to be is, it's astonishing. And the fact that we blame Cassidy for it is just, it's absolutely insane. It's insanity with guys, with all the crap that we've given him over the years. But anyway, tonight, I hope all the Bruins fans like get actually check this out and watch, because like you said, guys like Makar, they're not quite Bobby Orr, but with the way we praise guys like Torrey Krug, we wish that guys like Krug and McAvoy would turn into guys like Cale Makar, because he's a freak of nature at the defensive position in the NHL, and I can't wait to watch it tonight.
Cale Makar is their leading scorer, so I don't know how often this happens in hockey anymore, that a defenseman leads you in scoring.
Is that regular season, playoffs, or both?
Playoffs.
Oh, okay.
He's the leading scorer in the playoffs. I think he was third in the regular season. I just called it up.
Did Doughty do that during those Kings runs at all?
I don't think so. Maybe, but I doubt it. I mean, it wouldn't have been Kopitar or someone like that. Makar was fourth in team scoring during the regular season, but in the playoffs, he leads them in scoring. 22 points in 14 games.
And how many goals?
And he's a defenseman. Again, defenseman.
Does he have like 8 or 9 goals?
5 goals.
Oh, 5. Okay.
5 goals. So, you know, which is something if your team sucks, but he's got MacKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, you know, he's got some elite, elite forwards. MacKinnon is arguably the second best player in the league,
right?
You know, at center. And your defenseman's leading you in scoring. No, Makar is legit, legit, legit.
Yeah, but I think comparing him to Bobby Orr is like committing a sin.
Here comes an update from Murray, and we're back with more.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
There. This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Eh, maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
Wow, just going to be... I've never been so excited to go to Boston, I'll tell you that.
There's that comment got you all upset. Well, yeah, this team triggers you, huh? Maybe it's any opponent. Maybe it's this fan thing. You got to really dump on the opponent. Makes you feel better.
Yeah.
They're not that good. They suck. You know, I don't know. I didn't play that game. But I think whatever quote-unquote shots or complaining the Warriors have done about you has been pretty damn mild. And called you, you know, not very classy Boston or whatever. Like, got you all hot and bothered. And now this one, I can't wait to get back to Boston. What'd you say?
How dare he point out a fact that we are classless? Is there any chance he maybe was paying the city a compliment? Like, he doesn't want to come here because the Celtics play the Warriors tough, but this time he's actually excited because they have a chance to come here and win the championship?
I think my guess is that the crowd here gave them a little extra, just a little something. And I'm telling you, it's not super important, but it's like all these contrived motivations that these teams come up with. No one believed in us. You picked against us. You know, we hear all the haters out there. Like, it's just childish. But this is along those lines. You told this team and one of their key players to go F himself.
Isn't that great?
And maybe the Warriors said, oh, F us, F you. And I my guess is, Klay Thompson is saying, I can't wait to get to Boston and win on their court and tell those people to go F themselves. And I think you've given them a little something extra where, you know, this psychological game of the Warriors don't need this game. They got game 7 in their back pocket, you know, and like a lot of teams might be tempted to say, well, we don't need this. We'll see you back in San Fran for game 7. But maybe the Warriors look at it and say, no, we want it. We want this one. We want to pop the champagne right in their faces. F us, F you. And I wonder.
Oh, listen, they're totally the kind of team that would do that. They've been around long enough. They know what to latch on to and to fight a battle.
I mean, what would the Patriots do?
Oh, totally that.
That's how Bill would handle it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Murray. He was definitely insulting the city. Yeah. I don't know how or why, but he was. It's kind of funny.
No, so what he's saying is, I mean, I think that place blows. I've never wanted to go there in my life, but this time I do. This time I do.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I know a guy at the Ritz. We'll put a lobster in his bed.
So these guys,
thing will bite him right on the ass.
I did decide to listen to the whole press conference. This kid is kind of a douchebag. This is how they wrap the press conference. Get a load of this, Murray. I guess he took a dip in the San Francisco Bay or something. I don't know. Go ahead, play that cut, Kevin.
Klay, how did your recent retreat on the water get you ready for game 5 tonight?
Man, that's a great question. You know, the Bay, it doesn't matter what time of the year it is, the Bay, you know, it can be cold, but when it's one of those days where it's in the low 60s and the sun is shining, I make it a point to jump in the ocean. I just think the ocean has healing properties that a pool might not have or a cold tub, and just to be immersed in nature like that, it really makes me happy, and just your whole body feels so great when you get out of that cold water. Listen. And it just feel like, honestly, you just feel a little closer to God when you look up at the beautiful skies and you just in the ocean. Like, it's a, I'm an Aquarius, so I've always loved the water my whole life, and it really is my happy place besides the hardwood.
All right, so the kid's a little bit of a douchebag.
Yeah, I think we should throw him in the harbor.
He's a drip.
I love it. Oh, my God. Let's take a dip in the bay with the feces floating by you and the dead bodies.
Yeah, right. How many people jump from the Golden Gate Bridge?
Oh, my God. All the suicide victims floating by with the raw sewage in San Francisco Bay. That definitely puts me closer to God.
Yeah. I mean, look, I have
closer to nature, that's for sure.
I actually got no problem with the person saying, like, hey, you know, take like a cold bath, maybe try a steam, it'll help you. But he's such like a weird hippie about it that I can't help but roll my eyes when I hear something like that.
I mean, I'm sorry. I'm a Sagittarius, so I'm inclined.
Aquarius.
I'm sorry, what was that?
An Aquarius. You got an Aquarius.
You gotta give me, hold on, I'm sorry, Kevin, you gotta give me that again.
I'm an Aquarius, so I've always loved the water my whole life, and
what?
It really is my happy place besides the hardwood.
It's a water sign, that's why. And see, Aqua is in Aquarius, thus he loves the water.
Yeah, I was born in a pool, Felger. That's the way it goes.
I'm an Aquarius. I never heard that before. I'm an Aquarius, so I love the water.
Let's throw him in the Charles.
That's my happy place. When I'm not on the hardwood. Okay, like, I get it. He's a little bit of a spoon. But in terms,
a little bit.
Wow.
Let's take a dip in the San Francisco Bay. That body of water is freaking gross.
Might be clearing the sidewalk in San Francisco based on what we saw at the Super Bowl. Seriously. Talk about people taking a dump on the road. Holy crap. Wow.
Literally.
But anyway, I do wonder about that piece. About usually a team wants to win at home. Usually a team, often you'll see it, we got a home game in our back pocket, don't need this one, they let up, etc. I wonder if the Warriors actually want to win in Boston. And you gave them just a little bit extra, a little bit extra reason for a team that doesn't need it. When I say extra, like 1%, 2%, whatever. But that's what these guys do. I mean, if I'm the Celtics, I'm sitting here saying no one believes in you. Everyone's giving you up for dead, and you do play that little game. You know, whatever it takes. Bertrand and Zolak the other day, they've already rented out the top floor of Encore or a space at Encore.
Yeah, and all the Celtics will be there, too.
To celebrate. Well, the point is, like, of course they did.
Yeah.
Like, you can't win the championship and then get on the horn and say, where should we go? You know, someone has to, you know, you just can't then and there, the buzzer sounds and say, oh, someone's to go get some champagne.
Yeah, do you require reservations?
run out to that gross liquor store across the street on Causeway and get us some champagne. Yeah. No, they have to actually have ordered it, and then they have to actually go somewhere, so they can't make the ride exactly. Do you think you can get us in? How many are in your party? 68.
All we could find was the town line.
Right. See, so you actually have to do that. You have to plan all that stuff. That's not a slight. But if I'm Ime Udoka, I get in the locker room to the guy and say,
use it.
By the way, guys, you know they've brought their champagne. You know they've already planned their party out at Encore. It's the top floor at Encore.
Yeah, and again, that's
you know this.
Tatum says back, yeah, no, I know, I'm going.
I'm going, yeah, I know. But, I mean, this is what Bill did with that Super Bowl.
Philly.
Guys, you know Philly already has planned their parade route out. And, of course, because men, we are such dumb animals. We go, they have? Oh, they think they're going to win? You know.
Yeah, they're already planning the parade.
Guys, you can't plan the parade on Monday night.
The day before,
Tuesday morning,
right.
You have to plan the parade. Just like you have to plan, you have to have the champagne there in case you win, and you have to book the event space in case you have to go. So that's not a slight. It's just, it's technically what you have to do. But you use all these little things because, again, men are dumb animals, and anything will get us going. So someone tells you to go F yourself. No, F you. And, oh, you ordered the champagne? Well, I'll show you. Whatever. You use all these things.
No, we are. We're like dogs.
No.
Like labs.
We're the easiest people to motivate, the easiest humans to motivate. We're just dumb men.
And the easiest to fool.
Exactly. But either way, the whole Klay Thompson thing. F me? No, F you. And I think the Warriors want it here. I think the Warriors want to win in Boston.
Yeah, I think he should go hang out in the seaport so we can jump in the harbor.
The long commercial-free segment is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is purely a take that exists in my head.
Getting into your head.
Tell you what's in our head.
With hot sports takes.
And we share it with you.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Celtics were overwhelmed early in the first quarter. They collapsed late in the fourth quarter and were awful from the free throw line. All three of those are pressurized situation. Starting on the road, finishing on the road. Standing by yourself at the free throw line. Celtics were bad in all of them. It's almost like these young guys have never been in the finals before. Meanwhile, the Warriors were fantastic early, setting the tone. On fire late, confident, closing it out. And tremendous at the free throw line. Almost like they've been in the finals 6 of 8 years. To start the game, the Celtics were so tight. Their body language was so bad. It was so clunky. And the Warriors were loose and fluid and fast and running. And it's like, yep, younger teams. We've seen this before. Tatum's 24. Robert Williams, 24. Jason Tatum, 25. They can shrink in these moments. The Warriors have kids too, but they're all on the bench. So there's just advantages here with experience, and it doesn't end with a roster. Ime Udoka's done a great job, but Steve Kerr has played in 5 finals, has coached in 6 finals. And I'm watching it last night, and I'm feeling like this is starting to feel a lot like those Belichick-Patriot playoff games. They've just been in so many of those situations. They just knew at the perfect time all the right levers to pull.
Colin, again, he's another guy that feels it's starting to feel like the Warriors. I know people feel that way. It's hard not to feel that way when you win a couple in a row. And for the first time, you know, one thing bleeds to the other. A couple guys in the Globe believe that. Chris Gasper wrote this morning. He says, this loss clearly wounded them, meaning the Celtics players. This loss clearly wounded them. You could see it in their eyes and feel it in their voices, even as they professed unwavering confidence. Their belief was truly shaken for the first time all postseason. I sort of felt that too.
Yeah.
You know, that they were, for the first time, they were punctured. And I hadn't felt that. You know, at all, even when they were down to the Bucks, or anything, you didn't have that feeling. And this one had that feeling.
And didn't Chris point out, too, it was a line, I believe, from Jaylen Brown after that game saying, like, we were all looking around waiting for someone to come help us. Or I'm paraphrasing there, yeah. But it was something along those lines. And it's like, well, no, you got to help yourselves, dude. What are you doing?
Well, that was him throwing Marcus Smart under the bus.
Yeah,
I think it was the Wings blaming the point guard and vice versa. But either way, you know, he feels that. Gary Washburn in the Globe feels it. He wrote after the game, it seems the Celtics' weaknesses are coming back with a vengeance on the biggest stage. They committed an inexcusable 18 turnovers and received a combined 4 points from their second unit. He says perhaps there's too much pressure on Tatum and Brown at this point in their careers. Brown began by missing 8 of his first 10 shots and never looked comfortable. Do you agree that perhaps there's too much pressure on Tatum and Brown at this point in their careers?
I mean, yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah, there might be. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to handle to take a team to a championship. And they all need help. Every star player that's ever come through the league, they've all needed help.
Says Udoka's running out of explanations. Why did his team fall behind 24-8 in such an important game? Why do they have so much trouble with the officials? Why can the Warriors convert their mid-range jumpers, but the Celtics are shooting bricks? He writes, the Celtics are just blowing this. Are the Celtics blowing this?
In part.
Yep.
In part.
He says they are lacking mental toughness. True or false?
True.
Yes.
They are letting every outside distraction affect them, while the Warriors just keep trucking. It's a shame because when they are engaged and focused, the Celtics are the more talented team. True or false?
True.
Agreed. He says they melted down in the fourth quarter, exhausted from a long season, with too much focus on the officiating, unable to overcome a team that prides itself on execution. So here they are with no margin left, no more room for lackadaisical starts or silly turnovers, no more excuses. Win two or go home. They don't seem up to the task, writes Washburn. Do they not seem up to the task?
At the moment, yes. I mean, yes, they don't. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes.
Yeah, at the moment, they don't seem up to the task. But I will tell you this, that after game 5 against Miami, I thought the Heat were cooked. I thought the Heat were cooked. So, but again, in the same breath, I'll say, what happened in game 6? Jimmy Butler happened. So this is where I think in these moments in game 4 in Boston, Steph Curry happened. So sometimes in these series in the NBA, these pivotal moments is where a guy's got to step up and all of a sudden ascend to a greater height. And maybe that's Brown. Maybe that's Tatum. I'm just telling you, it's got to be somebody. And preferably one of those two. Someone's got to go to a place that they haven't gone yet.
Michael in East Boston, his comment line says, I called to rip Tatum a few days ago, and now I want to do it again. Okay, Mike, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Stephen A. Smith said the Warriors smell blood. Wrong. They smell diaper deuce. I'll give Deuce Tatum credit. He forgot to grab his fake shoulder injury last game. Listen up, Deuce Tatum. I would love it if we can channel old Draymond Green to kick Tatum in his baby nuts to see if he flinches. If there has to be missed shots, drive that turnover Titanic into the iceberg. Sink it your effing self. Don't pass to Smart. Don't pass to anyone else. Do it yourself. Channel that Milwaukee game, that one great game you have that Maz said, do that, Deuce. That's it.
Okay, out there, Michael's referring to Jason Tatum as his son, Deuce. He's not addressing Deuce. You should be able to get the...
Yeah, so look, I use terms that sound contradictory. And I say, like, in some ways, I say Tatum's got to take the game over. And I said, simplify. Don't try to do too much. And I think, you know, to me, they're one and the same. But my point is, you can't put yourself in trouble. Okay, play to your strengths. Dominate the game, but play to your strengths. Don't play to what Golden State wants you to do. Play to what you want to do. And then all of a sudden, make them chase you. You've got to flip it. And look, it's easier said than done. I'm using very general terms. But Tatum's got to elevate his game.
Matt, in the car, your thoughts on Jason Tatum.
Hey, so...
Matt, I don't think you're quite ready. The comment line said, why don't they put Tatum in the post more?
I wouldn't mind seeing that, but not a lot.
Why don't they put anyone in the post more?
Well, right.
It's just not the way the game's played anymore.
No, but you know what? Just show it. Show it. Like, I think this is one of those things where if you do it once or twice, then all of a sudden they become aware of it, and now all of a sudden maybe guys start to slide off you and they think you're going down low, and it creates a shot opportunity, opens the game up a little bit. So I've always felt this way about Smart going into the paint. He doesn't have to do it every time. Just go in there a couple of times, take that 8-footer. It's money. He makes it the large majority of the time. So you just have to show it to keep him honest. They just haven't been, they haven't been scoring enough in there in the last five quarters. They got to figure out a way to do that, or again, they're just going to be sitting there chucking up bricks all night.
And it's hard not to look at tomorrow night and say it begins and ends with Jason Tatum. So it's hard not to think that. We'll pick that up with some commentary from Tim Legler, who joined us earlier, and your thoughts at 617-779-0985. First, a quick update from Big Jim Murray. That only takes 90 seconds. There are no commercials, so don't leave your radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.